Someone was planning to come by, but they weren't sure when.
You heard it here first. Dan might bail on us again. Hello, everybody. Oh. Route 616, episode 55. Your home for all Finn's Marvel main continuity. We are back. All three of us. Incredible.
Yay.
We have an interesting lineup today. We have half Thor and half Iron Man in this one.
God.
Should be a fun time. Possibly. Maybe not.
Good.
Who knows?
Times. Good times.
It'll start strong.
Yeah.
I like the first story we covered.
So, do we have any interest in pop culture notes to start us off this week?
Okay, well, the latest Marvel TV series is now done.
Yeah.
And boy, is it done like dinner.
Yeah, it went down from a 13 to an 8% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Holy shit, I hadn't seen the last episode.
Oh, yeah. It started out, the first episode was not bad. It was maybe a... I'd have given it a 3 out of 5. But the last episode, I would have struggled to give it a 1. They didn't go anywhere that the comic went, and where they... For whatever reason, I don't know. But for some reason, that completely baffles me. They decided to just not really go anywhere. The character motivations were vague and pointless. And, some of the action was just completely nonsensical. Characters were doing things that they didn't need to do to accomplish, you know, ends that served no purpose. You know, it was just... It got to a point where it was tedious.
So it was 1992 in comics, basically.
No, I wouldn't even give it that much credit, to be completely honest.
They didn't have enough pouches then?
No, there were no... they just... I mean, they had a great... Like I say, a great concept. They had all the work done. They just had to translate it to film. And instead they went, nah, this is too good a story. People enjoy this. We can't film this. Or something, you know. I don't know what they were thinking. It made She-Hulk look good.
Well, it did everything She-Hulk made fun of in the last episode and its last episode, apparently, from what I heard.
Yes, actually, in a lot of ways, they did do a lot of stuff that, you know, I mean, She-Hulk's last episode, which was just this pathetic attempt at trying to be meta. This was worse. This was just a pointless endeavor. I don't know why they bothered.
From what I've heard of what's going on in Marvel Studios, they're seriously debating a pretty big reboot on Phase 5 because Phase 4 was so unpopular. So they probably didn't want to actually do anything with a secret invasion so that if they changed course, they didn't have to undo as much. Well, but the logical answer to that would be just don't make the show until you know where you're going.
Well,
but that seems beyond Disney.
If anything has been proven this year, it's that big universe reboots go well in theaters.
Well, you know, and this is the thing. You can
That's
say
a joke
that,
about
but
Flash.
Yeah.
No, you can say that, but okay, there have been some movies at the theaters that have been incredible, like Mario Brothers. I mean, that was a fun little movie. You know, and it was 100% CGI, but it was well done, it was funny, it was well thought out, it was actually fairly charming in spots. You know, there was a lot about it to be recommended, and it broke a billion, right? It was huge, so people are going to theaters, but they're only going to see things that look interesting. And I would argue that it's not that the fans hated the series or, you know, things like that. Marvel's going at this the wrong way. Is they gave the fans crap and the fans went, whatever.
Yeah, I mean...
You know, they went, oh, I hate
I
this.
Saw
you know,
every
oh,
single MCU movie Boom. In theaters until Endgame. Yes, even The Dark World.
Yeah, I've heard you guys complain about that one before. Yeah,
and I have not gone.
The shits.
And I have not gone or wanted to go to a single MCU movie after Endgame.
Well,
Black I've only Widow, seen Black Widow and Spider-Man.
Black Widow was the closest.
Black Widow's actually really good.
Yeah, I know. It just felt extraneous after her story was already ended. They should have released it when they originally planned.
Yeah, and if they had, it would have been much better received.
I would have gone to it, and I probably would have really liked it, because I like Black Widow a lot. I just, after she was already dead, and I knew this was a prequel just to fill in some backstory.
Yeah.
I didn't really care. She's already dead. What does this add to the franchise going forward?
Yeah, going back to Civil War after Endgame is a bold move that didn't necessarily play out.
If she had lived through Endgame, it would have worked, because then it would be character development for her going forward.
Yeah, but I mean, you can argue they were trying to introduce Yelena. But and they did a great job.
Which is pretty successful.
What they were trying to do, because
have they done anything with her since then?
Hawkeye
though?
Show.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen that or heard much about it.
Which is probably one of the better received shows at this point.
Well, it was funny in spots, I will say.
It's pretty well cast. I've seen a few moments. But.
Yeah, but the Captain America TV show with Falcon and the other Falcon guy was really well cast, and it was horrible.
Yeah, that was the show I was the most excited for, like, any of the MCU shows, because I thought a buddy cop style show with those two would be hilarious.
Oh, it would have been if they'd written it better.
Yeah, and then I heard about the writing, and I'm just like, yeah, now I don't want to see it.
Yeah, it's so good. Dan remembered both the characters' names.
Yeah, Farty and Floppy. Well, again, it's all about, in my mind, because they've got the production budget, they've got the actors, they're not giving them good stories to work with.
They're trying to do too much. They're rushing so much out the door, they don't have time to work on anything.
And you can say that, and that's what everybody believes, but the problem is they're not trying to do too much, because when they release these things, there's nothing going on in them.
Yeah.
At all. Literally at all. There's nothing happening in these shows.
Yeah, not a thing that's happened in Phase 4 has mattered.
Yeah, it's all just been filler.
Back in the earlier phases, like, every movie advanced the overarching story. Phase 1 was really just introducing characters, but that's important. And then they had Phase 2, where everything was moving on Civil War. Phase 3 was everything was building towards Infinity War and Endgame.
Yeah.
And then Phase 4, what are they building towards?
We don't know.
Secret Invasion?
That's what they say.
They're building towards Phase 5.
A TV show that they advertised so poorly that I didn't even know it was happening until it was almost over, and got an 8% on Rotten Tomatoes for the final episode.
Yeah, it's literally just been Alien Resurrection. Right, just tedious, horrible, pointless, diarrhea.
They didn't have an actual direction for Phase 4 of bringing a story together, more of let's get through this phase and get to the next one where we can build.
Supposedly, they're supposed to build Phase 5. The next one.
And
is
then,
the point.
Yeah, let's get to the next one and build our big story for the Kane Avengers movies.
Then why does Phase 4 exist?
Exactly. What's the point?
Supposedly to introduce the multiverse is the main
priority. It's not like comic books where you kind of have an obligation to produce one every month, so you might have to do a filler issue to transition between one point and another.
Yeah.
Movies don't have a fixed release schedule. They could just say, we're going to take 2 years off, and we're going to come back, and we're going to do this big story.
Well,
people would be hyped when they come back.
One of the problems is now, too, that it's so revolved around getting Disney Plus subscriptions with the TV shows.
It's not about telling a good story. It's just sell product.
Yeah, like, Search for Spock was not a good movie, okay? It wasn't. But it served its purpose in setting up Save the Whales.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is my favorite Star Trek movie.
There you go. What? Sorry, what? Never mind.
It did
serve its purpose. I, this entire Phase 4 output With the potential exception of Black Widow, has served no purpose.
Most people like Spider-Man too.
But I thought that wasn't part of the MCU.
No, the Spider-Man
was Sony, so it's
not MCU.
You don't
know what you're talking about.
He means Spider-Man as well.
Yeah.
Not Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 2 from 20 years ago.
Yeah, all done by the same company. It's not part of the MCU. Fuck off. I've gotten
flamed. The Tom Holland Spider-Man films are part of the MCU movies. It's everything else that isn't.
No, I've gotten flamed hard because I suggested that a certain actor that showed up in a Doctor Who episode was one of the MCU actors, and everybody fucking torched me. Because, oh no, he played Spider-Man, he's not in the MCU. It's like, okay, fine, Spider-Man's not in the MCU. It's only the Marvel Studios ones that are Marvel movies. What all these other movies are, I don't know. But apparently they're not Marvel movies.
They're not,
and this
Marvel
is on you guys,
Cinematic
not on
Universe
me.
Because of marketing.
No, but this is on you Marvel
that,
fan.
I would argue that Far From Home made all the Spider-Man's MCU retroactively because all three actors showed up.
Yeah, they technically are retroactively now because of No Way Home.
Well, that would make Venom retroactive too, wouldn't it? Because he's supposed
he was
to
in
be
the post-credit scene, so sure.
Yeah, he was also in Spider-Man 3, so yes, Venom is.
Well, that too.
Not the standalone Venom movie with Tom Hardy, but Venom, the shitty one, is
yes.
MCU.
And this is where their argument is: no, it's not, because it's not done by Marvel Studios.
Well, it's not meant to.
It's funded by.
It's not meant to be, but they essentially made it canon.
Yeah, they made it canon by incorporating Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man and referencing events of those movies.
Like I said, Phase 4 is all about it making the multiverse a thing.
Yeah, and also but to the point about Spider-Man being liked that you made, Ryan. People liked those movies. If neither one of them existed, the MCU would look basically exactly the same. Like, they didn't advance the greater story.
No Way Home leads into Doctor Strange a little bit, but not
a little
that
bit.
Important.
But what did Doctor Strange accomplish that WandaVision didn't?
Nothing.
Yeah, exactly. And then No Way Home was fan service.
Yeah.
It was just fan service. That can be a fun movie, but didn't really advance the overarching story. It was just, hey, you like Spider-Man? Here's Spider-Man stuff.
It was just what it was just 2 or so hours, however long it was, of making sure that nobody knew Peter Parker's identity again.
Yeah.
Nobody cared what his identity was.
And then they blew it at the end when
care.
He, after no one knew his identity, went out and recorded that message about how he was going to try to fight everyone.
They just did their version of post-Civil War Amazing Spider-Man in terms of the identity thing.
And we know how popular One More Day is.
Yeah, well, didn't quite. Well, they kind of did go that far now that I think about it, considering MJ doesn't know who Peter is now. They pretty much did do One More Day in live action form.
Yeah, One More Day sucked.
Except Aunt May died this time.
Mephisto hasn't been added to the MCU yet. There's still time.
Man, you lost the relationship and the aunt. What a fucking sacrifice.
You
didn't get anything out of it.
What a loser.
I
anyway,
know, right?
shall we dive into the main topic tonight?
I suppose we could. So, we're going to cover the ending part of our nice big run of Journey into Mystery with issue 123. Then we have a few of the Tales of Asgard. And then we have a few of some Iron Man stories we're going to cover. So, to start us off, Journey into Mystery.
For God's sake, I forgot the demon made the cover of this.
Journey into Mystery number 123, DA story. And that's a good reaction. This one's titled, While the Universe Trembles. Stanley and Jack Kirby here, of course. Vincent Coletta's on inks. Colette and Kirby on the cover. Artie Simic is on letters. October 1965 release date. I hear October is a great month. 16-page story, and I will
nothing
take this
good came
one.
Out of October.
True.
And I said that with full knowledge that I was born in October.
So was I.
I knew that too.
And so was Moira. So there you go. One and
okay,
three
something
still
good
counts.
Came out of it. Don't kill me, please, Moira.
She's getting ready to fly it. Fly
yeah, I was
going to
say
so
they're
going to
be in a different part
this.
Of Canada here. So
yeah, you're safe until she gets back.
She'd make time.
Oh yeah.
Watch yourself after next Thursday, though. So, starting off with, well, the universe trembles. Thor and Harris Hobbs travel to Asgard. Yes, Thor has taken a mortal into Asgard here. As per Thor's promise
after
to allow
Hobbs...
After
he just got in trouble for taking a mortal to Asgard.
Yes. As per Thor's promise to allow Hobbs to accompany him so that he might write a story about Asgard in exchange for destroying evidence of Thor's secret identity of Donald Blake. Crossing the Bifrost Bridge, they are shocked to find a number of Asgardian warriors who are tending to their wounded following their defeat at the hands of the Absorber Man. Thor learns that the Absorber Man has attacked Asgard after being brought to the secret realm by Loki. Inside the palace, the Absorber Man has taken on the properties of the energy unleashed from Odin's Scepter of Supremacy, and has rechanneled the energies back at the Allfather. This has no effect on Odin, who simply absorbs the attack, so I guess you could say Odin is the Absorber Man as well. He absorbs the attack back into his scepter. Abandoning this form, Absorber Man in turn attempts to attack Odin straight on. Odin attempts to attack Krul with a whirlwind, however, this causes the Absorber Man to change into a human cyclone instead. That was an interesting moment in the comic. Meanwhile, on Earth, in a remote Asian jungle, oh, here's where the comic gets good. Soldiers are searching for a local witch doctor whom they hope to kill in order to subjugate his people.
I want to call attention to several things here. All of which pertain to Stan's understanding of geography. First, the sort of witch doctor they're creating, which really only exists in stereotypes. But they're stereotypes that apply to Africa, not Asia. You don't have the guy that dances around the big wooden mask with the painted face on it in Asia, even stereotypically. And second, this jungle that's populated by primitive tribes and communists is located in Mongolia.
Oh, yes. The great
notorious
island
for
of
its
Mongolia.
Dense foliage.
The great
and
island
tropical climate.
In Mongolia.
Yes.
Mongolia is well known for its jungles.
Because they do name drop that it is Mongolia later in this comic. I read it this morning.
I'm absolutely sure there are jungles somewhere in the Gobi Desert. There's probably a big jungle.
Yeah. Right,
I'm
just
sure
a straight line like we saw in Sergeant Fury.
You gotta get through those pine forests, you know, and such, you know, to get to, you know, the one real city in Mongolia. But somewhere in there's a jungle. I'm sure of it.
Don't you know that you naturally go from jungle to desert?
Right. Yeah.
And all these complaints are still better than when the demon, that's the witch doctor's name, formally shows up and gets a comic featured on him.
Okay.
We're not going to cover that for a while, because it's in the next big Thor run, but...
Oh, okay. So are you done, or is there more to this brilliant story?
Well, let's get back to the witch doctor.
Oh, there's more. We haven't even gotten to the Odin Ex Machina yet.
Oh, God.
This witch doctor comes across one of the Noen stones that was dropped by Thor, because he forgot how to count, remember, last time?
The one that was dropped in Philadelphia.
Yeah, the one that was dropped in Philadelphia,
from a height of, like, 1 foot.
But they do say that, the stone, like, transports itself or whatever in the comic at one point. It's very dumb, but, yeah. Thor, when he was in the region collecting the stones in a previous quest. The stone gives the witch doctor enhanced strength that allows him to fight off his pursuers. He ultimately sends them fleeing when he is able to catch their bullets in midair and throw them back at the army, sending the soldiers fleeing. Back on he becomes Superman. Back on Asgard, the Absorber Man gets a new idea. Absorb all the properties of Asgard itself. Simply absorb all the properties of Asgard. In doing so, Creel begins to grow in size and power that dwarfs even the might of Odin. Loki then appears, explaining he was the mastermind of the plot, and that because he controls the Absorber Man, he has proven that he is mightier than Odin himself, and by Asgardian law, is entitled to carry the scepter of supremacy. Odin, realizing that he has no other choice, hands the scepter to Loki, who basks in his victory. However, this proves to be short-lived when the Absorber Man believes that he should be entitled to the scepter as he has done all the dirty work, and Crusher Creel would be correct.
Yes, Loki did fucking nothing except get cold feet when he actually set up that floor murdered.
However, this was all a trick orchestrated by Odin, who, as Loki and the Absorber Man fight over the possession of the scepter, explains that the scepter merely channels his fast powers, and that in another's hands it is useless. Odin then
what
uses...
What are you, god of scepters?
Odin then uses his powers to send both Loki and the Absorber Man into space, where they freeze up in the vacuum and left to orbit in the void. With the battle over, all the Asgardians hail Odin for his victory over Loki. Thor then remembers that Harris Hobbs was with him, and finds the reporter among the wreckage, thankfully unharmed. Well, thankfully, it might be taking some liberties. Odin is furious that Thor brought the immortal to Asgard and demands that he, you know, like he was last time, and demands that he return him. When Hobbs learns of the battle he missed, he is equally upset. Finn's fare far worse for the reporter when he attempts to take photographs of Asgard, but finds that his camera has also been destroyed. With no other choice and accepting his failure, Hobbs agrees to return to Earth with Thor. While back on Earth in a remote region of Mongolia, the Nornstone-empowered witch doctor attacks an opposing village. He is called a demon by the villagers, and decides to take the name for his own. With the village under his control, the demon then vows to take over the entire world. As this is happening, Thor and Hobbs returns to Earth, where Hobbs realizes that even his memories of Asgard are now gone, and wonders if he has been tricked by Thor. Thor explains that although his waking days, he will not remember his experience among the gods, but he will remember them in his dreams. That's how that arc ended.
So here we see the big problem with Thor.
That he exists?
No, Thor is the least problematic character in this comic.
Thor's actually pretty good, but, and this is a trend that continues. Thor will have these great epic arcs that go really long and are generally quite entertaining, and they'll have no clue how to end them.
Mm.
So Odin will just show up and snap his fingers, and everything's fine again. They have these huge world-ending stakes, and Odin just, like, everything's good, problem solved. Snaps his fingers, everything's solved. And off they go.
But this has been a running problem for Marvel since I've started working with you guys on this.
They manage to get one panel left to finish it.
So, it's all over.
The thing is, well, it's
more pronounced when they have like 10 issues of build and it's really good and then they do that.
It's annoying in concept and becomes more annoying the more it's used. I think it actually works here because it feels very much like, oh, finally, Odin is actually fucking punishing Loki because all this time he's never really done anything about Loki. So it actually kind of feels like it works here for me.
Yeah,
that's
this one
what
didn't
made this
bother
issue all
me.
Right.
This one didn't bother me at the time because it was the first time he did it, and as you say, it makes sense. This is more of a problem that I've
upon
seen
reflection.
Going back to it, that this is the first time they did it, and like 3 days ago in my own reading, I was reading another one of those year-long Thor arcs, and at the end, everyone's just like, oh, here comes the Odin Ex Machina, because everyone's just expecting Odin to show up and solve the problem.
So what Bill's saying is get used to this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
But yeah, I mean, It's definitely annoying. I give it a pass for the first time, and it actually being logical here. The bigger problems with this issue are setting up a problematic character in the demon, which is also not as bad as it could have been.
That got a pass for me for it being 1965, and
it's not as bad as you think it'd
characters
be.
Being everywhere in media at the time. It's no worse than what other people were doing.
The real annoying part of these last couple issues for me has been fucking Hobbs. He's an anti-boy for me. Go away.
Yeah, Hobbs sucked. I think this is the last we see Hobbs.
I don't think it is from a comment I read before, but I could be wrong.
It might be just not for a long time. Let me check when Hobbs actually shows up again, if he shows up.
Yeah, I was about to do the same. He does show up again, Thor 182, so it's a while.
What one even is that? I know I've read it, because I'm in 200. Oh. Okay, I remember when he shows up in this, I think. It's not actually that bad, because he doesn't really do anything.
he's to this where he doesn't really do anything.
Oh, he doesn't do anything except be annoying and make the story not make sense.
Yeah.
And then he doesn't show up again until Thor 272.
I gave this one a 3. I liked it. It was decent.
I also gave it a 3 because, like I said, at the time I didn't realize how annoying the Odin thing I was complaining about would become.
It's not as problematic an issue, because like I said, this is really the first time that Odin actually punishes Loki, so it works at the time. I'm sure upon reflection it'll be a pain in the ass to go back to.
and even coming back to this issue, I didn't dislike it today. I had fun reading it. I got really, really annoyed with the demon stuff. Not even because of the problematic elements of the demon, which, you know, I expect for a witch doctor character, but with what it demonstrated about Stan's absolute lack of grasp of anything resembling geography. Like, not knowing stuff gets a pass a lot of times for me because the internet wasn't a thing back then. It's not like you could just go to Wikipedia and look it up.
But
I mean, for God's sake, look at a fucking map, Stan.
Well, we did back then. And I'm not. I'm basically
can
not.
Speak from experience.
Oh, I fucking can't, because I can remember being in school, and when you needed to know about a country, you know, you didn't turn on the TV and hope the Mutual of Omaha was covering that, you know, that particular place at the time. You opened a fucking encyclopedia, because every family owned a set of encyclopedias, and it talked about that country. If you wanted to know about Mongolia, you opened an encyclopedia, and it covered everything from their GNP to their environment.
It could tell you exactly where the jungle is located.
Like, not just where it was located, but, like, literally it talked about what industries existed, what the people were like, what their culture was like, what their fauna was like, what the foliage was like, their weather, and their political relationships with everything. Encyclopedias existed for a reason. And back then, we used them.
Yeah,
Wikipedia,
I mean, it was the same thing when I grew up in the
80s. It's called Wikipedia for a reason.
Yeah. Because I was also pre-internet, so you'd get the encyclopedia, but, like...
What's that like?
I can pass not knowing all the details, especially with the number of comics, but this isn't even go find an encyclopedia and read it, which isn't that hard, but is time-consuming. This was literally, look at a goddamn map.
Well, and that's also a good point, but, I mean, it was not difficult to read 2 pages about something in the, you know, in Britannica or whatever. If you wanted to know about a place because you were doing a paper on it, you opened the encyclopedia and read about the goddamn place.
Yeah, I'm just accounting for the fact that Stan is trying to write 12 comic books a month.
Yeah, without knowing anything, clearly not learning anything from his failures.
No.
Because I don't think he was aware he was failing.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. At this point, we have to keep in mind that at this point, comic books did not have an adult audience like some of them do today. I mean, sure, there were adults that read them, but they were written for 12-year-olds.
Yeah, but back then, 12-year-olds knew how to read a fucking encyclopedia.
They did, but I don't think many of them went to go look up Mongolia because it was mentioned in their comic book.
No, but they would have covered it in high school.
Yeah, by that point, they're not reading it anymore, so his target audience wasn't shitting on him for getting the geography right. It was people that thought comic books are childish that were making fun of it.
Okay, go with that, but I don't necessarily agree. Because I really do believe, you know, if even, you know, if I was in grade, you know, 7 and I got hit with a paper, you know, like 3-page paper about Mongolia. You know, boom. That's how teachers taught us, they forced us to go learn.
Oh, yeah.
About something, and then we wrote a paper about it and handed it in. You know, and yes, we did it through an encyclopedia.
Yeah.
Every kid had a fucking library card back then.
Oh, yeah. No, that was the same when I was growing up, because I was still pre-internet. I was substantially later, but I caught the tail end of that era.
Substantially.
Well, the bigger question is, what did Stan do when he had to do papers in school?
I don't think he did them, by the looks of it.
Well, I'm beginning to
Stan's
wonder.
Writing comic books where there's a jungle full of witch doctors and tribesmen in Mongolia, so probably nothing.
He probably didn't make it all the way through school.
Well,
certainly he started comics at 17 or something.
He would have been in school in Brooklyn during the Great Depression. His education likely wasn't the best.
Oh, I went to school in Nova Scotia in the 60s. My education wasn't exactly the best either. I was taught by nuns. But, you know, we still learn these things. I mean, I could have given you a fairly accurate description of the Gobi Desert at the age of fucking 10, even though I'd never been there. I could have told you all about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Stan could have too, but Stan would have been wrong.
Well, yeah. Anyway, before this boils down to me expressing just how much I'm learning to dislike Stan over the past year doing these podcasts, let's move on rapidly.
Sure. I mean, it just goes to show that the U.S. school systems have always been worse. But anyways,
the U.S. school system was one of the best in the world. But it just collapsed in on itself in the 70s.
Yeah, in the 60s it would have been good.
It was good.
Yeah. I know what's coming next. It's not going to help your opinion of Stan.
Well, I want to make one final point before we move on to the next thing. What killed the American school system, the concept of a free and required education, public school, was probably one of the Americans' greatest contributions to civilization. And most Americans in the 50s and 60s were exceptionally well educated, or the late 60s, early 70s never would have happened.
Yeah.
They would have blithely kept on, you know, in Vietnam, and university kids would have gone, okay.
Yeah, right. the protests against Vietnam were a result of them being well-educated.
It was, thank you. And I think criticizing the American educational system as it existed then is incredibly unfair. You want to criticize it now? Yeah, it's embarrassing.
You know, it's garbage now, but back then it was actually good.
Back then it was exceptional. It was better than the Canadian one.
Absolutely.
But what killed it was the fact that they adhered to the creationists, continued to control the education of the schools up until the late 80s, early 90s, when they finally outlawed creationism, right, and finally accepted what the rest of the world had been accepting for 40 years. You know, the religion continued to hold sway in American schools long after it had anywhere else in the world.
Reagan economics also served a lot to kill it, because when you cut taxes, stuff that taxes pay for, like education, doesn't get as much money.
That's right, and a lot of the ghetto school systems began to collapse in on themselves.
It's unfair, but... That comes back to what I was saying about Stan when he would have been in school, because we're talking immediately after...
Yeah, no.
1929.
That's what I was saying. Right, he started comics when he was like 17 and 30s. And
yeah, he would have been in school in these formative years right after the Great Depression, when there was no money to pay for good education.
Or possibly during. He might have been in school during
it. Yeah, he would have been going into high school in like 1933.
But that doesn't excuse his audience.
No, it doesn't excuse his audience, but it kind of shows why he may not have had as good an education as you'd get later.
Yeah.
Now anyway. Moving on. Oh.
Move on.
Journey into Mystery number 114 B story, titled The Golden Apples. Stanley and Jack Kirby on this bad boy. Fancy Coletta's on inks. Chick Stone. What? Yeah, oh yeah, that was when Chick Stone was still working with Jack on covers. Eddie Simic's on letters. This is way back in January and of 1965. Five page story, because this is Tales of Asgard type story. And Bill will take this away.
Go read Little Red Riding Hood. The end.
Yeah, pretty much.
Now, I'll give the actual Marvel spin on it. The goddess Iduna walks into forests of Asgard carrying a bundle of golden apples. These golden apples of immortality are for Allfather Odin, and Iduna brings them to him every year. Along her journey, she meets Hakon the Hunter. Hakon greets her warmly and tells her to go in peace. As Iduna continues further down the path, she next comes upon a frail stranger. The stranger offers Iduna protection along her journey, but she declines the offer. The stranger takes a strong interest in Iduna's basket and begins asking her questions. She quickly grows suspicious until she discovers that the stranger is actually Fenris, the wolf god in disguise. Fenris shapeshifts into his true form and attacks her. Hakon the Hunter arrives and drives Fenris away with his enchanted battle axe. The axe strikes Fenris, spiriting him off to the shadowy land of Vrinheim. The end.
Essentially a pertinent cartoon.
But this is literally Little Red Riding Hood.
What yeah. Big paws you have, sir.
I've seen that one before.
Yeah, I love that one. It's brilliant.
And you'll note that apple is not gold, hence the result.
Oh, okay, fine. No problem.
This was a solid 2. I didn't like this. I didn't hate it. But I didn't like it.
I don't even remember what I gave it. Let me look. Yes, this was a 2 from me, too. I couldn't remember if it was a 2 or a 1 because I was really pissed that it was just a retelling of Little Red Riding Hood. And they even acknowledge that it's interrupting the Loki story. But then it's written by the regular creative team, which means that it wasn't a result of a deadline being missed and them having to rush something out. They just decided to interrupt their Loki story to tell Little Red Riding Hood.
Yes, folks, they did it on purpose.
Well, at least they changed things up.
I couldn't give it a 1. I was laughing throughout this for the most part. So.
I will say I loved Human Fenris's mustache. He had, like, a very... They just drew straight lines, like, in different directions, like whiskers for his mustache.
Cool.
It was phenomenal. But, I didn't like it. I respect the attempt to try something different, because at this point, Tales of Asgard is floundering.
Yeah.
And the next time they try something different, it will succeed.
Okay.
But we're going to have to wait a while for that, because when it succeeds, it goes into a giant epic that runs for almost 2 years straight, so...
Cool.
Moving on to the next one, number 115 B-Story, titled A Viper in Our Midst. Fuck. Stanley, Jack Kirby here, of course. Vincent Coletta here, of course. Artie Smith on letters. February 1965, five-page story. Bill will also take us through this one.
Alright, Thor was leading a band of Asgardian warriors who were riding out to stop Gan, the most deadly of the storm giants, on his way to attack Asgard. Loki was, of course, resentful of Thor, thinking that he should be leading the warriors. As the battle begins, Gan hurls a boulder at Thor, who blocks it with his hammer, causing it to shatter. Loki does not enter the battle, claiming that the cunning Loki is far too clever to take needless chances, and stays back in safety to plot the defeat of Thor. He then uses his magic sword to weave a spell to give Gan the final victory. Before the spell can work, Gan is driven back by the Asgardians' arrows. As the storm giant is being driven further back, They let loose their catapult, using a missile containing sleep fumes to incapacitate him. The Asgardian task force goes to where the giant should be sleeping, but finds nothing. The rest of the party leaves, but
we found
Loki,
shit.
Yeah, Loki remains behind, saying he wants to search more. He then makes a mystic gesture, causing an eagle soaring nearby to return to its natural form of the giant Gan, saving him from the wrath of Thor. The giant then pledges his debt to Loki, and in return the trickster reminds him to not forget it. The day will come when I order you to repay this debt. This was the first of many alliances with the forces of evil for Loki, as his plans and schemes to overthrow Asgard and destroy Thor. This was an absolute nothing story. They were setting something up that never pays off here.
Yeah.
Because Gan is never seen again.
Oh. Well, that's disappointing.
But I think their original plan was to have Loki going around forging a bunch of alliances that they were then going to bring into the regular Thor comic as like
kind
of
like they did in
future enemies for Thor.
Like they did in the early hundreds. When they brought over Salter and whatever the other one was.
Yeah.
So it's a Phase 4 style comic.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they had an idea with it, and then their take on Jason and the Argonauts took off, and they just abandoned it.
There's no Multiverse of Madness to follow through with, of course.
Yeah.
This was a low 3 for me, because it was a fine little 5-page fight. And at the time, I didn't know what a wet squib of an ending it was going to be, because I figured Gan was going to show up and matter, in which case this would be an interesting little aside.
But?
But he did not, and so I kind of regret giving it that 3 now.
Good, because I gave it a 2. This wasn't that good. I didn't find it interesting, really, and honestly, the Red Riding Hood might have put me in a bad mood. So
the Red Riding Hood definitely put you in a bad mood for this. I also was in a bad mood when I read it the first time. It helps that I don't look at the character appearances before I rate the comic. So at the point that I rated it, I thought Gan was going to matter.
Oh, I didn't look at that, nor care to look at it.
Yeah, I looked back later and I'm like, oh, he never shows up again.
Yeah.
On to our last Tales of Asgard for today, issue 116, B-Story. This one's called The Challenge. This is the best Tales of Asgard of the day. Stanley, Jack Kirby, Vince Coletta, already Simic Gun Letters, March 1965, 5-page story. And Bill will take us away with this one as well.
Alright. Loki has convinced King Hymir to help him in his eternal feud with Thor by having the king give Thor a series of very difficult challenges. Thor is unable to refuse them or he's dishonored, and if he fails, he becomes a slave for the cruel king. The first challenge is to catch a fish from the dreaded Sea of Eternal Darkness. The fish in the sea are not mere fish, but undersea monsters. Oh great, when they're quoting this, they include the bolt. No fishing line could capture such a creature, but the mighty hammer of Thor can. I'm not reading that like it's quoted from the comic there.
Yeah.
The challenge done, the king gives himself the main task to break a drinking goblet in only 2 minutes. He realizes that his time is short, so without delay throws the goblet at a rock wall, shattering the wall. He then tries to use his mighty hammer to no effect. Thor knows that if he should slay the king, even if he didn't complete the challenge, he would not be a slave, except he would break the heart of fair Princess Rinda. That's not clear writing, but Thor has figured that he would murder the king if he couldn't complete the challenge, because Thor is right on character here. Rinda was not worried about herself and urged the Thunder God to do what he must, since he had been deceived. With that, he hurls the goblet at full force at the head of King Hymir. The goblet is shattered on his crown, revealing the source of the enchantment, the magic catalyst. This inspired a fit of paranoid anger in the king, directed at the trickster for supposedly betraying the king and revealing the secret to Thor, and ordered Loki gone from his kingdom. As he left, Loki vowed, "Eternity is endless, I shall never stop scheming." I feel like you and I have very different opinions on this one.
It seems like from the way you read that.
Yes, because Thor is completely out of character here.
Yeah, it sounds like, well...
He can't beat the challenge fairly. That he took because he had to be honorable. So his solution is to fling the thing at the guy's head in a fit of rage and basically try to kill him.
To be fair, when I was rating this one, I was stuck between a 2 and a 3 and pretty much was just being nice and gave it the 3, so...
That's fair. I gave it a 2.
This was a very low 3.
The other issue I had with this one is Mjolnir wasn't powerful enough to break the damn thing.
I like this one more because it had the side characters in it.
That does help, but those two things bothered me a lot. Like, it's the same creative team. They know what Thor's personality is. They created it.
Yeah.
It's not like some other writer was writing the Beast story and got it a little wrong.
Yeah, he didn't even let Larry take this, so... Yeah, right. No, I can understand the two. It's technically the highest rated average one out, but it's still not very good.
Oh, it was the best of the three on an entertainment factor. It's just some of the inconsistencies what it kept me from
giving it a 3. Oh, yeah, it's really inconsistent. It's I noticed that when I was reading, but I just was like, fuck. One of these has got to get a 3, right? Oh, shit. Yeah, pretty poor stretch for Tales of Asgard there, really.
It was really floundering at this point, and it's impressive they managed to turn it around as quickly as they did next issue.
So we won't get any more Tales of Asgard for quite a while, but when we do, like Bill said, it's going to be like a 2-year stretch, so prepare yourselves for that.
Yeah, I hope you like the ongoing story that happens there, because if not, it's going to be a long one,
but
fortunately,
anyway,
I did enjoy it.
We shall now move into a few Iron Man stories for the other half of this episode. So this one is issue 66A story to start us off. If I Fail, A World Is Lost, this is titled. We've got Stanley and Don Heck is on art on Iron Man. Heck of a guy, that guy. Mike Esposito's on inks. Frank Giacola and Jack Kirby on the cover. Sam Rosen on letters. March 1965 release date. A 12-page story. And Dan will start this arc off for us.
Okay, and can I say it's nice to see that Marvel's finally clued into the fact that red is an option, and they have a lot of it on the cover.
Well, yes.
The cover's not that great, but they're starting to use the color red a lot more.
They're only their best characters were red, Dan, Iron Man, and Giant Man.
I mean, just the window
and the red skull on that cover.
Yeah, with the window, it's red background and. At the detriment of making Captain America pink, white, and blue.
Yeah, it kind of hurts the Captain America logo to have it on a red background.
But, the more red you have, the more likely you are to attract customers' attention. Right? It's just basic human psychology.
Yeah, that is actually true.
Right. It's the way it works. So, it's why presidents tend towards red ties and things like that. Like, if you want to succeed in business, wear a red tie. The red is a color that gets people's attention. But to go on to the story itself, the synopsis for If I Fail, A World Is Lost. Brace yourself, Effie, here I go. Okay, U.S. Senator Harrington Byrd has commissioned Stark Industries to build a new submarine, which is to be tested by Iron Man. When a Happy Hogan offers to test the sub in Iron Man's place, Tony declines, which puts Happy down, so he's no longer happy. Happy's sad. While testing the sub out at sea... Yeah. No, that was bad. While testing the sub out at sea, Iron Man soon stumbles upon Atuma and his army, who are building giant weapons for Atuma's latest plan to try and take over the surface world. Where have we heard this plan before? I have a feeling...
They don't have a lot with Atuma to work with.
No, but...
He's like the third string Atlantean villain.
Yeah.
And one of those strings hasn't even been introduced yet ahead of him.
Oh, goody.
Because I am putting Prince Byra higher.
Okay. Well,
he's at least royalty. Atuma doesn't even have that going for him.
Oh, that's just too bad. There's nothing wrong with the common man, even if he is a mermaid. You know?
Amen, Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah, a mer thing. Attacking before Atuma can implement a missile, which would make it hard for humans to breathe on the surface. Iron Man makes quick work of Atuma's troops and super weapons. However, in a one-on-one battle with Atuma, Iron Man is quickly defeated and imprisoned by the Atlantean warlord. Breaking free of his prison, Iron Man then uses the experimental sub to destroy Atuma's weapon before returning to the surface. There, Iron Man doesn't tell the others of Atuma's attack, and Senator Byrd assumes that the test's failure is due to Tony Stark's apparent playboy attitude. To make matters worse, Happy Hogan has left while Iron Man was fighting Atuma. Okay, nothing we haven't had it like already, like a dozen times.
So you remember earlier when I was talking about necessity of transition issues in comics?
Yes.
This is one of those.
Yes.
It's fine for what it is. No one thought Atuma was going to last more than about 5 pages in a fight with Tony. It's really just a medium to wrap up, like, bring people down from Tony's last adventure and get people ready for the excitement of his next one. I say that sarcastically because I have read the next adventure.
Okay.
They
well,
thought it was better than it clearly was. But for what it was, this comic was fine.
Yeah, it sure brought me down. I gave this 2 stars. This wasn't that good.
I gave it a low 3 because it was fine.
By the way, I normally like transition issues, so that's saying something.
I think the thing that saved it for me was the Byrd stuff. Because they're setting up Senator Baird to be an antagonist for Tony, which he really hasn't had. Like, all the antagonists have been antagonists for Iron Man. So to have someone set up for Tony that the comic itself establishes is a good guy who's just doing what he thinks is right. And it's not his fault that he's falling for the presentation Tony's giving to maintain his secret identity.
And Tony says for the comic, like, if only he knew. Like, he thinks these birds are good guy, too. He's just doing his job.
Yeah, like, that's, I think, the thing that elevates this comic for me, that they establish a guy that you kinda hate, but you can't really hate, and that he's an antagonist for Tony.
He's getting his own Thunderbolt roster, J. Jonah, except it's another layer on top of them that he's just doing his job, so is he really a bad guy?
Yeah, he's not actually a dick like the other two. He's just... he's bureaucracy personified.
That is the good part of this
which
issue, but it's not enough
works
to carry
with the government
for me.
Would have to deal with.
Yeah. Yeah, that's entirely true.
I think so, Byrd's involvement will be more prominent later on.
He features prominently into an arc coming up that's one of my favorite Iron Man arcs of everything I've read for him so far. Because they have a whole thing where Tony has to go testify to Congress because Byrd calls him in with the intention of stripping him of his funding. And Iron Man stuff keeps interfering with his ability to go testify to Congress, and it's actually a pretty good arc.
Okay. So now we're moving on to 68, I believe?
67.
Okay, you put 68.
It's just that I'm doing 67.
Oh, okay. Go for it.
I did give myself the one I didn't like. I didn't
Wait,
like
you liked the next one?
I don't know. Let me look. No.
Okay.
I didn't like any of these.
Yeah, no, none of them are good.
Actually,
the one we just covered was the best of the Iron Man.
Yeah, the one we just covered was the best one.
And I would describe it as fine.
Okay, so Tales of Suspense number 67A story, Where Walks the Villains? Stanley and Don Heck again, Mike Esposito again on inks, Jack Kirby and Mike Esposito on the cover, Sam Rosen on letters, April 1965, release date, 12-page story, and I will take this one begrudgingly. Ahem. As Pepper Potts chews Iron Man out for Happy Hogan's departure, Happy himself has taken a one-way trip to Shannon, Ireland. Oh, let's go. To get away from his life at Stark Industries. As Iron Man recharges himself, he has unknowingly become the target of Count Nefaria. Oh, yes. Who has taken up the guise of the Master of Dreams and is seeking revenge against the various members of the Avengers following his last defeat in Avengers number 13. Using the Dream Machine in order to create fatal nightmares, the Dream Master traps Iron Man in a nightmare world where he is first attacked by the Unicorn and the Crimson Dynamo. Defeating these enemies, Iron Man wakes up fine and he was dozing off. And of course, it's weird to Tony right away because the Crimson Dynamo is dead. Finishing his recharging, he tries to appeal to Pepper to think differently. However, she still doesn't think very much of the Iron Hero. Fed up, Iron Man flies to Ireland and to talk to Happy into coming back home. There he finds Happy at his grandfather's firm and attempts to talk him into coming back to the States, which Happy refuses. As Happy and his grandfather leave Iron Man alone in the cabin to see the farm, Iron Man is trapped in an ever-dream state. In this dream, he is pitted against his foes, the Crimson Dynamo, Jack Frost finally making his return, only in dream form, sadly, Gargantus unfortunately returning, the Melter, and the Black Knight. Overpowering all these foes, it causes so much feedback that it causes the Dream Master's machine to overload and explode, causing Count Nefaria to look bad yet again. No, that's not what it says. Causing the dream to end. Waking up, Iron Man walks in to find that Pepper has called Happy to talk him into coming home, a proposition he accepts.
Okay.
So, pretty much, Iron Man just wasted his time this whole issue.
Yeah. Fuck this comic and fuck dream sequences in general.
Amen. Let's fucking go. You tell him, Bill.
This comes from someone that had to read one Son of Satan today. That one at least had Hieronymus Bosch-inspired art. This doesn't even have that.
This comic fucking sucked. I gave it one star. Fuck this bitch.
I also gave it one star. I hated this comic.
That's the first Iron Man comic I think that's gotten a one star for me.
Well, the next one isn't going to be any better.
No, the next one's a one-star spoiler alert.
Yeah.
This one has a 2.3 average on the site. The next one has a 2.03, I think.
Wow. Okay.
2.39 to be exact, and 2.06.
Okay, right there, Bill. Right.
Tales of Suspense number 68, A Story, If a Man Be Mad. This comic made me mad. Stan Lee, this one's written by Al Hartley. That might explain part of the poorness.
There's our problem right there. They gave it to a romance writer.
Mike Esposito on inks again. Frank Giacola and Jack Kirby on the cover. Sam Rosen on letters. May 1965 release dates. Oh, wow. My happy birthday, Dad. And 12-page story.
Okay. If a man be mad. Having returned from Ireland, Happy Hogan resumes work at Stark Industries, and Tony gets a letter from his cousin Morgan asking for help. Okay.
There's the one slightly redeeming feature of this comic out of the way, introducing Morgan Stark.
Okay. What Tony doesn't realize is that his cousin Morgan is under the employ of Count Nefaria, who is hoping to use Morgan in a plot to destroy Tony Stark. Okay, well, I'm okay with this part so far. First traveling to the States to pretend to seek Tony's help, Morgan is introduced to the Stark Industries staff and shown around the building. That night, as Tony is on his way to a party, he happens to spy a rocket and decides to investigate it as Iron Man. Finding there's a bomb inside, Iron Man rushes back to the Industries and calls a bomb squad as Tony Stark. Arriving on the scene, they find the field empty. This whole episode is part of Morgan's plan, and Morgan, hiding in the bushes, uses a Vizio projector to make Stark hallucinate and think he's seeing aliens. Using the device on Tony Stark, Morgan...
Hey, relevant.
Yeah. Really. Morgan begins to make everyone doubt Tony's sanity and causes Senator Byrd to begin demanding that Stark be stripped of his defense contracts with the Army for fear that he may become a threat to national security. Oh, well, hell, make him president then.
I mean, that is a reasonable reaction from Bird, too. That's why I like him as an antagonist.
Okay. Believing that he's not insane, Stark returns to the original location where he started seeing the aliens as Iron Man and begins scanning the area, unaware that Morgan has followed him there as well. Just before Morgan can blast Iron Man with a Visio projector, real aliens from the planet Froma arrive to investigate Earth. They spot Iron Man and begin attacking him for some reason. Anybody? Why do they attack him?
Because they're aliens, and that's what aliens do in the 60s.
Okay.
No, I got nothing. I skimmed this today.
Okay, during battle, they discover Morgan as well. Iron Man fights off the aliens and saves Morgan's life. Well, that was good of him, don't you think? Afterwards, Morgan is forced to tell everyone that Stark is sane, and Senator Byrd retracts his demands as well. After everything is sorted out, Morgan is taken back to Europe to get punishment for failing Count Nefaria. What the hell was the point of that?
I guess we needed to introduce a chicken shit heel into the program.
I mean, Morgan's great. Everything else about this comic is terrible.
Yeah.
AKA, this comic's terrible. I gave this a 1 as well.
I also gave this a 1, because they don't even explain Morgan's motivations yet. Morgan's motivations are what make him interesting.
Okay, well, it was kind of a nothing burger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was your usual, is the hero going mad thing. That doesn't even really work in the moment, because you know that they're going to publish another issue next month, so they're not actually going to have Iron Man go completely insane.
It is convenient that the aliens traveled all that way just to arrive at the right time.
Yeah, they were going for a 50s-style twist.
Very
it worked about as well as a 50s-style twist.
Yeah. No, it's, no. It wasn't good.
That sums up this episode.
So I did some checking on Al Hartley while you were reading that, because I called him a romance writer and made fun of him for writing bad comics because he was focused on those.
Yeah.
He doesn't write much there either. He wrote like 6 issues of Patsy Walker. And then I remembered why I recognized his name. He's not a romance writer. He's the romance artist. He draws all the Patsy Walkers in the 50s.
So he was trying to stand out at writing.
Perfect.
Yeah,
to give the
and he's not a writer at all. He's an artist. He's a penciler.
Okay.
And I will give him this. It goes better than when another prominent penciler tries writing a bunch of stuff.
Okay, well,
I'm
it's
looking
no
at
worse
you, Jack
than the
Kirby.
Crap that Stan writes, so, yeah.
Oh, and having read through enough of it in the 70s, I can say Stan makes Jack better.
Okay. I don't believe you, but okay.
Keep this podcast going long enough, and you'll find out. It's bad.
Sure.
It's real bad.
Okay. Still don't believe you, but okay.
That was this week's comics. We hope
That's
you enjoyed.
That's it for this week.
Thank
next you,
week.
Folks, for sticking around for all the crap. We'll be giving out free toilet paper from now on with all our podcasts.
Next
hey, I read
week.
Virtually. You won't be getting free toilet paper from this.
Next week isn't much better, to be honest. We're gonna do our Captain America stretch from these issues we just read with Iron Man in them for 66, 67, and 68. Then we have Tales to Astonish issue 68 and 69 to end off Giant Man's run finally in that title, and then we're gonna get to issue 70 of Tales to Astonish to start Namor's to end next week's episode. So yes, we're gonna have the one Namor, but.
Ooh.
Oh, we had 2 Giant Mans. I forgot that when I said things were looking better next week. I thought we only had 1.
No, next
week. Yeah, okay, next week is
going to
be a little rough.
Yeah.
It ends on a high note, though.
It starts and ends on a high note,
yeah.
Which makes it better than this week.
Yeah. That's why I said slightly better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, if you're watching this on YouTube, please would like to subscribe, comment, even share if you would like to. We are also available on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and of course Spotify. And if you're listening to this on Spotify, click that poll. Let us know why you like Morgan Stark so much, or why you want to go to Shannon, Ireland. But anyways, we will see you all next week. Hope you enjoyed, and peace out.
Have a good one, everyone.
See you later.